Hello, and welcome to the Business Decisions Podcast. My name is Stuart Wood. I'm the CEO of Caravel Law and your host for this podcast, featuring discussions at the intersection of business and law. My guest on the podcast today is Cordell Jacks, the CEO, co-founder, and general partner at Regenerative Capital Group, a unique entrepreneurship through acquisition accelerator that invests in regenerative businesses. There's lots here that is different from other accelerators, so we're definitely going to get into what all that means. Cordell has a wealth of experience in the clean tech sector, social finance, and market development, and has received several international awards for his work. He launched Regenerative Capital Group in 2022 with his business partner, Mike Miller, and they are just assembling their first CEO in residence cohort. There's a number of topics to get into here, and so I'm delighted to have Cordell on the podcast to discuss all of this. Cordell, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Stuart. Great to be here.
So I'm really excited to learn about Regenerative Capital Group. But before we dive into that, I think that the term regenerative business might be new to some people. Can you share what you mean by that?
Yeah, for sure. So regenerative is really the evolution of what we've been trying to do in social impact. You and I have gone through what has been a lot of acronyms and a lot of different evolutions of work. So when we look back, we can start at green economy. We can look at CSR and corporate social responsibility, creating shared value. We can get into Millennium Development Goals, Sustainable Development Goals, ESG, B Corps. All of these have been scaffolding to where towards ultimately where we want to see business go and our economy go towards using business as a force for good. Regenerative is really the evolution of this. What are we trying to do with all of this good work in social impact? Ultimately, we're trying to support through our life's works, through our companies, through our businesses, anything that supports good social movement and really a thriving environment. What's different about regenerative is that it's ultimately rooted in life-centered principles. And what do I mean when I say life-centered principles? Well, when we look at some of the big challenges and issues that we're facing, whether that's climate change or biosphere degradation, widespread mental health issues, rising inequality, any of these big polycrisis issues, we see that ultimately for all the good that our economy is doing and lifespan and health and all of the advancements we've made, we're ultimately finding ourselves in what is a degenerative biosphere, an economy that's not serving the health of everyone. Regenerative principles really uses the values of our best teacher, Earth, and the 3.8 billion years of life around us that has shown its evolution, its interdependence, its adaptability, and putting those back at the center of business. And so whereas before sustainability and do less harm has been the goal of our social impact efforts, this is really saying that, you know, sustainability or net zero is not good enough. We need to be net positive. We need to support thriving communities, thriving environments in all that we undertake.
And so can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to start Regenerative Capital Group?
Yeah, it's a bit of a serendipitous story. So I'm a Winnipeg boy originally, and 20 years ago when I graduated from the University of Manitoba Business School there, I was recruited a year before graduating by a gentleman who had set up this executive management development program at Canada's largest financial services institution at that time, headquartered in Winnipeg. And that's my business partner now, Mike Miller. Got into financial services, realized that's not where I wanted to be. And so I went off and spent my career in social finance and international development market systems and circular economy initiatives and clean tech companies. And then ultimately found myself here living on Vancouver Island in these last couple of years. That gentleman that recruited me some 20 years ago happens to live near me here by Campbell River. He had spent the last 20 years acquiring small, medium enterprises in Canada across a varied degree of industries. He put young operators in place, friends and colleagues of mine, and grown these companies to fantastic companies and cultures. He had had a very successful exit of one of his companies 2 years back and reached out to me to really get support in what was going to be his impact thesis. We had one design principle, and that was, how do we support entrepreneurial ecosystems here in Canada? Now, as you very well know, we have a great, mature, well-supported entrepreneurial ecosystem across the country. We have incubators, accelerators, funding for every stage of the scaling journey. And so we thought, well, this isn't really, there's not, we didn't see a space for our play here. What we did do is get turned on to what's happening south of the border of us, which is really looking at a lot of the Ivy League business schools who have focused on this alternative entrepreneurial career path, ETA, entrepreneurship through acquisition. And so while our focus here in Canada has mostly been on startups and venture launches, that curriculum is really about, hey, look at the macro economy. The vast majority of our economy is small business. The vast majority of baby boomers are these business owners looking to retire in the next decade. And the vast majority of them do not have succession plans. Instead of doing the risky startup route, go buy a small medium enterprise looking for ownership succession, take a good company and make it great. And that really aligned with my business partner's experience. And so ultimately we said, how might we support an emergent ecosystem for ETA in Canada? And then ultimately, how do we use this not just as traditional business as usual, take good companies, maximize profit, grow them, and potentially flip them or sell them again? But how do we use this really good entrepreneurial platform to address some of these big, wider issues that we're facing as a society and as a civilization? And that's really where the regenerative lens to this type of acquisition and succession came about.
Well, the idea of a startup is a concept that I think people will understand, to having an idea and trying to bring it to life with a business. Entrepreneurship through acquisition might seem a bit more intimidating since it involves buying a business. Do you find that you're having to educate people about the model and demystify it a little bit for them?
Yeah, definitely. Again, it's not really been nurtured in society here. When we started this project almost 2 years ago, we went across and did an analysis of the business schools in Canada, and no one was training students in ETA curriculum and entrepreneurship through acquisition curriculum. So it's not second nature yet. And although we understand acquisitions, people who have the capital to go buy a business, companies that acquire businesses for inorganic growth, this model is new to many. I will say though that for many in our ecosystem, it's a breath of fresh air. Rather than going, I gotta start from scratch, find the idea, cross the chasm of market traction, market fit. Yeah, taking something that already has proven itself, that has good viability already, is a nice momentum to start with in your entrepreneurial career.
Does it select some people more than others in terms of the attraction of buying a business as opposed to starting a business?
Yeah, I would say that for the most part, we're still looking for those types of people that have that those entrepreneurial characteristics, grit, hunger, ambition, humility, ultimately going to, hurdle any obstacle that's put in their path. What it is drawing, we're finding, is a lot of folks who have come through the entrepreneurship ecosystems who are saying either, okay, I failed out, not because I'm not a brilliant person, maybe winds weren't at my back, the timing wasn't right for the product. I don't want to put up the mortgage again and try and, put it all the chips in on a swinging for the fence here. So we're getting a lot of folks there. We're getting a lot of folks that have come through the social impact community who are really, values aligned in terms of the type of work they're trying to do. And this really gives them a tractionable platform to start moving towards that impact rather than not only adding impact lenses to traditional business viability, but get going with something that already has legs. And then finally, I'd say that there's a lot of folks that are mid-career that have been working in big four accounting firms, have been working in large organizations who have just come to the place that if they're going to continue putting their effort into something, they want to have skin in the game, they want to have ownership, they're ready to lead. Maybe they've been number two, or they just see no future where they can really nurture a culture the way they see fit or that they want to. And ultimately, those who want impact to be at the core purpose of what they're driving their life's work towards. So we're really seeing a wide swath of individuals saying, hey, this is a great way to get all of those things that isn't the traditional entrepreneurial path.
So then, how does Regenerative Capital Group work?
Yeah, so we are a long life fund. Essentially, what we are doing is we are running our first cohort. We are running this like an accelerator model. So we are looking for, in this first cohort, six entrepreneurs who we can invest in. we can invest in ultimately their training and their acquisitions of businesses. So what we are doing right now, we actually have a call out until mid-September for individuals who are interested in this model. Once we've chosen this cohort, we give them a lot of support and training in what regenerative leadership looks like. What does it mean to go out and look for a business, not just from traditional, you know, viability and profitability lenses, but where is their regenerative value creation? Value leakage in the supply chains and the value chains, where is there a wider lens to be taken from traditional business as usual approaches to transactionality? How can we look at society and environment as opportunities, not for additionality and work there, but ultimately competitive advantage opportunities that will drive more value? We support them in going out in their due diligence process to ultimately speak to those owners, those legacy owners, and convince them that they should turn their legacy businesses over to this next generation of operators who will evolve the business and take it further. And then ultimately, as they step in to these leadership roles, to support them in taking the companies forward and their cultures and their wider multi-stakeholder ecosystems towards those journeys of regenerative value creation. And so really that's the cohort. We bring the capital to them. We do not expect that our entrepreneurs bring any capital to the table. So it's quite a nice offering. Ultimately, we want to buy you a company. You're going to invest equity in this company. You need to take it on a regenerative impact journey.
So the company doesn't have to have regenerative value creation at present. It just has to have the potential.
That's correct. And ultimately, most businesses have the potential for a wider right. lens to value creation. And that's really core to our theory of change, to our impact and investment thesis. How might we ultimately work across a number of sectors to ultimately demonstrate what regenerative value creation, what a regenerative business looks like? Rather than being prescriptive in terms of the sectors we are going in, the ETA model is really founded upon the success of the entrepreneur. How does this person and their entrepreneurial chops come work with us? What is their unique experience, their networks, the relevance that they bring, that they're ultimately going to focus their search on? And interestingly enough, though, many entrepreneurs who take this path, as they're searching for a business that they think is what they want to lead, oftentimes other businesses cross their due diligence path and they say, wow, that's a great business. I can really see myself leading and growing something like that. And so we'll really find out, particularly with this first cohort, where those businesses and what sectors those lie in.
And how has the search been going so far?
Fantastic. You know, we're getting applicants. We are a pan-Canadian initiative. And so applicants can be anywhere, but must be based in Canada. We're getting hundreds of applicants in for this first cohort from a wide mix of backgrounds, of diversities, and that's something that's really important and core to our work. Whereas the history of ETA in the U.S. has really been somewhat insular. That has a little bit to do with the Ivy League business schools that are training, but ultimately as well, a lot of these folks come from investment banking, management consulting, private equity backgrounds. We know that the most diverse ecosystems, the most diverse companies, the most innovative are the most diverse in terms of the people that they bring in. So we're really trying to level the capital and the playing field. So anyone with good entrepreneurial hunger can take advantage of this opportunity. I will say, though, that in this first cohort application process, unfortunately, we are seeing some of the traditional numbers in about 8 or 9 to 1 men to women who are applying. And so it is upon us as a new fund to really reach out to networks and to individuals who might self-select themselves out of this opportunity for whatever those reasons may be, and to try and bring them into this cohort.
The removal of the requirement for capital certainly removes an obstacle for a lot of people who might be interested in this model. What do you think are some of the other obstacles that might be preventing people from applying?
Yeah, I mean, make no mistake, this is an incredible opportunity, but this is not for the faint of heart. Whereas an entrepreneurial journey is, test a model, find market traction fit, grow a business, all these new things, although some of that newness is taken away, due diligence and acquiring a business is a tremendously hard process. It's reaching out to hundreds, often thousands of business owners, finding a business owner who wants to turn over their legacy to you, understanding how to do the due diligence, how to negotiate. And then really, once you've gotten to that stage and have acquired a business, that's where the really hard work begins, stepping into a legacy culture and a legacy business, and then moving it forward. That change management process, that just understanding and integration into a business is incredibly difficult as well. And then add on the additional layer. How do you move this business forward towards what is ultimately its core purpose, what it can really do to contribute to not just value creation from economic generation and employment, but ultimately in addressing these big issues that we need our economy to tackle.
And how are you approaching the education part of this in terms of letting potential applicants know what you're looking for in terms of regenerative business value creation and the entrepreneurship through acquisition model? How do you approach the education to get people to consider this as an option?
Yeah, so we have our website, www.regenerativecapitalgroup.com, that has a lot of resources that gives them a taste of the model of ETA and this type of search entrepreneurship, as well as some grounding in regenerative business principles. But this is a lifelong learning journey in both those aspects, and we're blending them together. Right now, we put on weekly webinars, hour-long webinars that people sign up for, and that gives them a next level layer of depth in terms of what this is and what we're looking for. And then ultimately, as an accelerator and as a fund model, core to our value proposition is regenerative leadership training, regenerative value creation training. And so we're pouring a lot of energy and a lot of effort into supporting these entrepreneurs on that journey, because regenerative leadership is, I don't want to use terms that are too big, but it's a bit of a paradigm shift in what we've been traditionally taught from management and our traditional business school perspectives. This is not looking at these as do business and then, you know, try and do some good. It's really looking at the core purpose of a business, looking at the core purpose of your efforts and driving value from there, mobilizing teams of ambassadors who want to use the tools and platforms they have at hand towards addressing meaningful change, meaningful effect in what they're doing. And so that's the secret sauce there, is really supporting them to become those regenerative leaders and case studies that we need to see in our society.
Well, it likely plants the idea with a lot of people, even if they don't ultimately become part of the CEO and residence cohort.
That's our hope. You know, as open and as level a playing field as we'd like to make this, ultimately it is somewhat exclusive in terms of the fact that we're going to invest, you know, years, maybe decades into these types of entrepreneurs and partners as we see them in the fund, and we're going to invest millions and millions of dollars into them. And so it is a small select group that we're starting with, but ultimately, hopefully those that are learning about this way of doing business, wherever they go, we can be allies and supports to them, and hopefully they go forward with a drive to ensure that anything they do in their career is ultimately going to be regenerative. And, you know, ultimately, just to say that if we're not working on regenerative issues right now, it's just not a lofty enough goal. You know, sustainability, as someone who's been at the forefront of sustainability work their entire career, it's just not good enough. We can't sustain ourselves, even if we do that well, integrated biosphere, and, you know, with widespread mental health challenges, with this level of inequality. Sustenance at this point isn't gonna help us in the long run.
So it sounds like the ultimate goal of this program is different than a traditional accelerator. You're looking for a different kind of impact than just what's the return going to be in creating six successful businesses, theoretically, from this program. You're hoping to have a much bigger impact than that.
Yeah, really, you know, we started this effort, my business partner Mike and I, asking ourselves, like, who do we want to impact here? And the avatars were really my daughter at the time, who was 2 years old, his grandchildren, and what do they need in their generation going forward? And so more successful business people, yes, of course we want them to be successful in any endeavors that they ultimately undertake. But ultimately, we were looking at a bigger systems change lens. We're continuing to work with business schools across Canada to open up this type of curriculum, not just ETA curriculum, but how do we ultimately use this giant inflection point of what some have called the silver tsunami, all the baby boomers, you know, getting ready to retire and handing over the keys to our economy. The vast majority of our economy is small business. The vast majority of people in our economy are employed by small business. How do we ultimately support through this model, you know, to be a little trim tab in the bigger wheel of change, really some systems change towards what transition towards a regenerative economy ultimately looks like. And we think this is the best and biggest lever to do that. This inflection point shouldn't just be change of ownership. It should be, let's bring in new ambitious talent, entrepreneurial talent. Let's change the capital behind the growth structure of these businesses. How do we bring in social values aligned blended capital that ultimately allow these businesses to have the breathing room to take a regenerative value creation strategy? And then ultimately, how do we upgrade the DNA of small, medium enterprise who traditionally have had to focus on viability and transactionality as core to their growth, to now evolve these businesses towards, what is our environmental, social, governance policies? How do we look at this business as a platform for the efforts we need in the world today?
And so do you ultimately anticipate some businesses might come to you wanting to speak to your entrepreneurs?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we're in a call to application for our entrepreneurs, and that's really where we focused our efforts. Find good entrepreneurs and they'll find good businesses going forward. As we have put out our theory of change, as we've put out our impact and investment thesis as a fund, we're getting a lot of business owners saying, hey, we see what you're doing. We want to ensure that our legacy goes forward, not just in change of hands, but in addressing these issues that our children and our grandchildren are really going to face. How can we work with you? And that's maybe not a surprising, but a nice bonus of this first year of going forward, seeing a lot of owners that are seeing good examples happening right now. If you look at Yvon Chouinard and what he's done with Patagonia, turning it over to a perpetual purpose trust is a huge move. He could have sold the company to the employees. He could have done a lot with that. But instead, all profits of Patagonia are going forward to saving planet Earth. A lot of these business owners, yes, of course, they want a good exit. They want value for their life's work. And they want to ensure that, their efforts going forward or the legacy going forward is supporting the society we want to see.
So if these companies take root and become successful, they'll set a role model for others and everybody will benefit from these kinds of companies emerging, flourishing, becoming successful and inspiring imitators. Are you fighting this battle by yourself? Do you have the kind of support from government and other partners that you need to create this kind of ecosystem across the country?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're starting to see a crowding in effect in terms of social capital, for sure. Those interested parties that want to see their capital do this type of good work and not sacrifice complete returns. So this is a good model for that. In terms of government support, we haven't quite seen that yet, but it is something that we really want to work on over time here. With our neighbors to the south of us in the U.S., they have interesting government programs like the SBA loans, Small Business Administration loans, where entrepreneurs can go and leverage upwards of 90% debt to acquire these types of small, medium enterprises. We may not want to do that type of heavy debt-ridden society here in Canada in the same way, but ultimately tools like that ensure that there is successful ownership transition and ensures that none of the economic or social capital is lost by business owners having to, shutter the doors and sell off for assets, let alone, as one of your past guests, John Schell, has talked about, ESOP models, employee share ownership program models, which is also in the U.S. We don't have a lot of that in Canada. And so, one of our longer term efforts here is to really ask government for support. How do we ensure that we not only see successful ownership transition happening here, but what might incentives be for business owners to transition their businesses to models or entrepreneurs, owners who can ultimately evolve their businesses forwards to that regenerative economic transition we want to see? And so that's something we're hopeful for.
It definitely sounds like the interests will align there.
Yeah, it should be a win-win-win model here. And there's a lot of opportunity to do so. And, moving towards a regenerative economic transition is not a private enterprise initiative. It's not a government initiative. It's going to take all of our tools. It's going to take civil society. It's going to take the philanthropic sector. It's going to take blended capital and approaches to do this. But we have all the tools necessary and available to ultimately see over this next decade How do we use the biggest ownership transfer in the history of our civilization, used for more than just ownership transition, used towards that economic transition we need?
And so how will you ultimately measure the impact of your program?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So this is the hardest component of what we're working on. What we are doing is new. We set this up in a couple of different ways. These entrepreneurs who come to us, again, no capital required, their equity is going to vest usually over about a 7-year period. On the day they acquire the business, they get a third of their equity. Over the next 3 years, based on traditional hurdle rates of growing the company and seeing growth, you know, making sure it doesn't tank, making sure it transitions well, is going to be 50% of the metrics we look at. But the other 50% is going to be really the co-designed regenerative impact metrics that we co-create together. We're never going to have an entrepreneur sign up for something that they can't commit to. And so this is really where the partnership of the fund comes in. As we look at the acquisition, as we map the ecosystem of stakeholders, as we look at the opportunities for where this entrepreneur really wants to drive change, how do we set some of those metrics so that they don't get sucked into business as usual? It always comes down to those small decisions. It always comes down to a question of cash flow. Well, is this easier? Is this quicker? And well, when we change the incentives, when we ensure that your equity and your growth is vested on making sure you don't make the quick, easy, short-sighted, short-term decisions, but ultimately on the long-term opportunities, I mean, that's really our supportive goal as a long-life fund. We're not in there to say, hey, buy this business, extract as much value, hopefully get a couple, you know, multiples better valuation, and then let's flip it. We have no exit plans. We are a long life fund. This is more of a hold co model in terms of what we're doing. And so that should really allow these entrepreneurs to take a wider and longer term lens to the impact and the value that they're going to create.
And I would think that there's a very strong peer learning opportunity for the six people as well who will go through this journey together.
Yeah, that was core to some of our design principles. So much like any other entrepreneurship journey, this is a roller coaster. There are good days, there are bad days. And particularly when reaching out to business owners and the level of rejection that these entrepreneurs are going to face, there's some rough days. As my business partner would say, when he was an early broker, he'd have to call up his mom some days and go, "Mom, do you still love me? Because 99% of the people tell me they don't love me." "Okay, thanks. Good. Let's go. I can go back at this." Being in a cohort model, with five other entrepreneurs, that's supportive, not just in the emotional support that they need, but ultimately these six individuals again are going to be on a very steep learning curve, a lifelong learning curve towards this type of acquisition process, and as well on the regenerative leadership journey. We've designed the fund so that the entrepreneurs in each cohort are co-invested in each other's acquisitions. And so rather than coming in and just being mavericks going, "I'm going to find a business and, you know, focus all my attention there," how do they hold each other up to the highest standards of learning? They want each other to be learning at the best rate. They want each other to be acquiring the best company forward. They want to be supporting each other in their CEO journeys going forward. And so, you know, we're using a lot of social impact innovations and ideas in the capital structuring, in the governance models, to make sure that this isn't just business as usual, focus on the siloed business. This is more of an ecosystem approach. And ecosystem, you know, you'll hear me use a lot of natural language. You know, we're bringing in an ecosystem of investors, advisors, of river guides, of people that can support these entrepreneurs. And I always say, you know, 1,000 trees does not make a forest. You can have 1,000 trees, each an individual potters and planters. That is not a forest. It's the ecosystem of intertwined interdependence that really supports resilient, evolving, dynamic, anti-fragile ecosystems. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do with these entrepreneurs and ultimately their businesses.
And so do you imagine that this is the first cohort of many? What's your vision for the future growth of Regenerative Capital Group?
Yeah, we have some high ambitions here. Definitively in these first couple of years, and in all humility, we have a lot of learning to do as a new fund in this space and as a new fund trying an innovative approach to this model. We want to have annual cohorts. If based on this first year's uptake and interest, it would be nice to have a Western Canadian, an Eastern Canadian cohort. We might have multiple cohorts going on throughout the years. We may turn this to open enrollment. there's a lot of questions, but one step at a time here. We're being asked to expand this model to the US already, and you know, we've just said we've got a lot of learning to do in this space. Luckily though, we're taking two really good models and blending them together. ETA, Stanford does a biannual review on the ETA sector in the US. Over the past 35 years, this type of entrepreneurship through acquisition has had a historical rate of return of 35.3% IRR. The average entrepreneur has gained anywhere from 2 to 3.5 million in equity per year in those successful acquisitions. Those are bananas returns. We've got a good platform and model of buying good businesses and making them great. And we've got a long history of success of those who have taken businesses across many sectors and looked at impact, not from an additionality or a liability lens, but as a competitive advantage opportunity. Blending those two things together, we feel pretty good about the growth and definitively this next generation. And I say that not in ageism. We have 65 and 70 year olds applying to our cohort, but this next generation of impact leaders ultimately want to see this type of opportunity where their life's work are addressing the issues that are pressing down on all of us.
And over time, you build a forest.
Exactly. Exactly.
So if someone is interested in learning more about the program, what should they do?
Yeah, first things first, check out our website, www.regenerativecapitalgroup.com. There's more on our CEO in Residence program, this cohort, that applications continue to go on until mid-September. There will be a next cohort in 2024. There are a ton of resources on our website to learn more about entrepreneurship through acquisition, as well as regenerative business principles. There are weekly webinars that we put on right now that is focused on the entrepreneurs that will be coming into our cohort. But as our cohort closes, that webinar shifts to small business owners who are looking at what their legacy might be and how they can move their legacy forward and evolve their enterprise.
Well, it's a really inspiring and ambitious vision that you have for this. And it sounds like we'll all benefit from the success of the program because we'll have more of these regenerative businesses out there flourishing and setting a role model for others. So thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today to tell us about it.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here, Stuart.
All right, I want to thank my guests today, Cordell Jacks, the CEO, co-founder, and general partner at Regenerative Capital Group. If you're interested in learning more about this accelerator, please visit their website at regenerativecapitalgroup.com. The Business Decisions podcast was created by the team at Caravel Law. If you're interested in learning more about Caravel Law, please visit us at caravellaw.com. Special thanks to Dwayne Wright for mixing and producing this podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review and share the episode with others that you think would benefit from these conversations. And until our next episode, I hope all of your business decisions are great ones.